Steve?
How are you?
Good.
If you come to the, Sean, did you know anything about the public hearing forms?
Okay, we can just announce the public hearing and we'll have a sign.
Double check on the left, if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can just.
That was it.
For future land.
No, I do, we have to use the code.
We're not having a public hearing today, we're just wondering where the form was.
Oh, we do have a public hearing.
Yeah.
On the north cemetery.
Okay, should have been marked on the agenda.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's, on the agenda item, it should say.
Okay.
Yeah, you can sit. I was, putting an intent for it.
Oh, thank you.
Maybe you read it. I don't wanna spoil your name. This one is a, because I forgot to mention, because this is a public hearing item. You have to have a form that you can fill out and then. On the back of one of these, so it's, we can just say,
okay. The Transportation Commission of April 19th, 2017 will come to order. It's about 7:03 or so. Okay. We have a public hearing on Potomac Yard. So the speaker forms that for the public hearing may be found at on the meeting agenda over there. If you wish to speak on the docket item where the public comment is being accepted, please fill out a form handed to staff at the table for consideration of that item again. I will call your name when it's your turn to speak. The commission has a 3-minute rule and staff refers to a timer. We will notify you when there's 1 minute remaining. Never been a problem. Okay. This is one of the first times I didn't find anything in the minutes, correct?
Okay.
Sitting good. Anybody else have any input?
I have a couple of questions, and maybe, I don't know, I hope people can refresh my memory about a couple of things, but it seems to be a bit of a change in form here. A couple of sections. Do I recall correctly that we actually made motions to approve the letter to give budget guidance to council, as well as the Safe Routes to School grant application? Like, it says here that we approved edits and endorsed things. Did we make a motion that time to do that?
You mean for the letter?
For the letter and the endorsement of the Safe Routes to School.
I thought we did both.
Okay. However, now, that brings me to the next question. If we made a motion, who made the motion, and the motion itself was not really recorded? The commission approved it. But other times you would say, for example, there's another section where, you know, Councilor McHale, or Commissioner McHale's, you know, made the motion to approve, et cetera. And, you know, it was seconded by the other commissioner, and everybody approved it, and we went on. And it's always been recorded that way. In this case, I don't see it.
It wasn't.
And then that's maybe it's kind of a question of form, but
we can go back and listen to the tape and make sure. I think you're right. It says the commission approved edits to the letter. This is on page 4, providing guidance on the 18 budget for staff to prepare. But we can go back and actually detail who it was that made the motion and
who was.
I think it'd be good to have it for the record. And
right.
I mean, you look at the end. It says Commissioner McMahon made a motion during the meeting. We don't have that for the other ones. Yeah. So
got it.
That's my question.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go ahead and correct that.
Yes.
Get that. Okay. Christine isn't coming, I guess you saw.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's the only one that notified me. Okay. And besides those corrections for the minutes, is there any other input? A motion to accept the minutes as adjusted? Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, accepted. Okay, we have the updates. Has there been any updates since Friday? Probably not. It's only been 3 days. Okay. The only comment I had is I had a discussion with staff on the Vision Zero outreach, and they're doing the pop-up surveys and surveys on Alexander Engage. It's the contractor has conducted these type of surveys in the past, and they've been successful. So it's a new change. Usually the city staff goes out and has public hearings, but this might be more effective in that the way I see it, as far as the manpower goes, it would reach, the amount of people putting their time in, it would reach a lot more people because they're going to survey people getting off the metro. And for Vision Zero, the pedestrians are really the ones we want to get their input on because they're the ones that it will affect the most, you know, safety-wise. And Alexandria Engage is another method to put it in. This is also a citywide survey, so it'll, you know, I'm sure that they'll do all the metro stations. But it's an interesting way that they're doing this, and maybe if it's successful for us too, that in the future we could do other inputs like that. So it sounds good to me. I don't know. I wouldn't think for Vision Zero that we would have any pushback or any complaints as opposed to some of the other public hearings we've had on other projects. So, but it sounds good to me. Okay. Does anybody have any other questions on the consent items?
I would mention on the parking, residential parking permit eligibility for residents of new developments. This policy was presented to the Planning Commission last month, and I think it's fair to say that our take on it was that the staff did what we thought was a very good job of developing an objective policy. But we kind of declined to say that the policy should be implemented because we felt that the question of whether there should be such a policy was a judgment for the council. And they're taking that up on April 25th. But we said, you know, council, if you do want to do this, staff has done a good job of demarcating how to decide one way or the other. So that's going forward on that basis.
Okay.
Did I get that right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the points that was made in our discussion was that
staff's proposal is acknowledged by staff as a piece of the puzzle. It's not the whole of how to regulate these interactions with the parking demand and supply and the impacts of the street. And so one of the things that I got the sense gained commission support was that this piece was well thought out and was defensible and ultimately needs to go in conjunction with those other pieces we talked about and that we've talked about here in this thing as well.
Well, yeah, sounds like they've done a good
job. This will be important in North Old Town, I'm sure, where a lot of stuff's going to be going on.
Yeah, but they'll need to implement the new policy, right? Okay, any other questions on consent items? Okay, we'll move on to the next item, which is the commission updates. Any other?
I've got an update, I guess, for us.
Okay.
As the Transportation Commission representative to the Commercial Parking Standards Task Force, is that what you're
Yes.
We had our second meeting yesterday, which is the 18th. And so I took a few notes that I wanted to mention for you all. Basically, we took a look at citywide policies and plans, really, that underpin the reason behind the fact that we're looking closely at the right amount of parking for various commercial uses. We're looking at a handful of those. But in particular, the discussion yesterday focused on approaches to setting parking standards, so setting the numbers, essentially, and the approaches to policy or strategies to mitigate parking impacts. So there are two separate discussions that were quite engaging and brought us the long way around to giving staff some recommendations on techniques, specific approaches. So let me see if I wrote that. That's what I wanted to highlight for you. We asked staff to bring back more information on an approach to parking requirement setting using a minimum and a maximum. So we're used to seeing minimums used. I think some of our small area plans refer to maximums in some areas, but we asked them to come back with some specific proposals on how that would look, as well as considering what it might look like to have no requirements for small sites, so sites below a certain size might not warrant the relative impact associated with burdening them with either finding the parking or going through the motions to find the parking. So we asked them to come back and talk some more about those things. We also asked them to come back with more information on shared parking approaches, TDM strategies for oversupply of parking, and the ways we could apply contextual credits or allowances. So something's near transit, how does that provide a credit perhaps against a parking requirement? And the strategies for using unbundling or pricing as a tool to address parking requirements for these commercial developments, commercial land uses. So those are some of the things that we discussed yesterday evening.
Okay.
In the next meeting, for anyone who'd like to attend just for fun, is scheduled for May 16th, and that's going to be very data heavy, as I understand it. Staff's going to bring back to us a whole bunch of the data they've collected so far that's probably both local and non-local, but how that data might be informing our discussion.
Okay, thank
did
you.
Did that cover that?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, we just wanted to thank Melissa and other members that will serve on that group. We know, I think it was a little bit longer of a meeting last night. I don't know. I know you guys had some great discussion, which is great. And we thank you for serving on that group. And we know that it might involve a lot of meetings, but we appreciate your time. So,
thanks.
Any other commission updates, Jake?
I have one. The Eisenhower West, Van Dorn, Policy Advisor Group has scheduled this next meeting. If you recall, the last time we met, I had announced that the last one had been postponed. So the next one is scheduled for Monday, May the 22nd, from 7 to 9 p.m. It'll be held at My Father's House Christian Church, which is located at 4746 Eisenhower Avenue, next to the FedEx facility. And if anybody wishes to attend, you're more than welcome to join. I think we're going to get some data on some of the air quality studies and other information that's been propagated so far in the planning. So that's my idea.
Okay, thank you.
I've been hoping to report some resolution on my long-standing lawsuit on the Purple Line.
Go ahead.
Every month goes by, nothing's happening, and the only thing I can say right now is that recently the Maryland Transit Administration filed a motion with the judge urging him to expedite his ruling. And for the first time we saw a sort of a break between the federal government and state government, because the motion was not joined in by the federal government. They simply filed a one-sentence line that said, we don't oppose it. And we have seen a sort of a discombobulated response to funding of transit programs from the Trump administration. Some people might say they're discombobulated about everything, but there are differing messages coming out about whether or not programs that don't have a full funding grant agreement are ever going to get, transit programs are ever going to get funded under the Trump administration. And in this case, of course, we stopped the full funding grant agreement just days before it was going to be executed. So it's going to be both a kind of a legal and political question how this is ultimately resolved. So stay tuned.
It continues to make the papers.
Just to share with the group, the results of the motor coach task force were circulated from the director of TENS to the city council. I'll arrange with staff to get a copy of the task force recommendations sent out to everyone, but that did go forward this week.
Okay. Looks like that covers all the commission updates. Next, we've got the discussion on the transportation long-range plan. I assume everybody's read the input there. At the pre-meeting, we had a long discussion on the pros and cons of the long-range plan. So I want to get everybody's input on this to decide if we should go to a two-year basis as opposed to one. Now, I can see if you have a year where you don't, like this year, apparently there's probably a one or two deletes, but there's no add-ons to long-range plan. So staff ask, why would it be necessary to reevaluate? One thing is that a year ago we had not everybody was on the commission, so some people might have a different way to vote. I know whether that would change anything, I'm not sure. The other thing would be if, since the council passed a Vision Zero resolution, that the importance of safety for pedestrians and cyclists and drivers might move up some of those projects, but I'm not sure that, you know, that would have any effect. I'm just looking at, you know, all the factors that might come into play. So I'd like to get everybody's input on this to see, you know, what they have. Now, what staff is recommending is it does take a lot of time to go through this process. Those of us have been here long enough to go through the process. It takes at least three meetings, and it takes quite a bit of time during the meeting to go through this. We've got out of here after 10 o'clock sometimes going through this. So it does take time. Another way to look at it is if there is an addition to the change of the list, if there's like one add, we could just look at the list and say, let's just vote on where that one project should be set, assuming that it's going to be in the top five. If that project doesn't look like it's going to be in the top five, then it probably doesn't matter because the top five hasn't moved lately. So that's another way to do it. If you just have one or two items, you could just consider those items and just say, okay, let's just vote on the top five and leave the rest alone. So, you know, there's a lot of ways this can be done. I guess staff can kind of enlighten their viewpoint on how they see this.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we have only two slides on this item because we know that tonight you all are considering the North Potomac Yard Plan and making a recommendation on that. So I think we had only prepared a short discussion for this evening on this topic. But yeah, if it would be helpful, Chris, our Division Chief for Transportation Planning, was going to kind of go over a little bit of background on the plan, because I know we do at least have two members that are new since we did this last time, and so it might be some benefit to just kind of giving a little bit of background, so, and then our proposal for how to move forward. So if you wanted to do that, that would be great.
Sure, absolutely. So the Transportation Long Range Plan, the first time the Transportation Commission kind of prioritized this list was back in 2010. It's a list of unfunded, it's basically an unconstrained, unfunded project list. And so the idea is that everything that's funded is obviously in the capital improvement plan that that the commission works on in the fall, in September, October, November. And so then the idea is that when extra funding is found, or if extra funding is found, City Council or TESS would look to the long-range plan to decide on which projects to fund next. That's why, you know, and back in 2010, I wasn't here, but I've been hearing it was a very different financial state than right now, where there actually was it was very likely that extra funding would be found for new projects. And so, and then there was also a very big push for small area plans to be studied, to be completed, and then hence new projects to be put, to be added or taken off of the long range plan. So, however, you know, it has, you know, every year, you know, like you said, Mr. Chair, it does take four or five meetings. You know, I think last year the commission started in April and finished in September, based on finding, deciding on evaluation criteria and then weighting the projects. So this year, because there's not that many, or because there's very little change in the number or the types of projects that are unfunded, and because there's a lot of things happening over the course of the next 9 to 12 months, for example, the North Potomac Yard plan will hopefully be finalized, and then several other regional funding bodies will make decisions on projects to fund. We thought that this year it wouldn't really make sense to put in all of the effort to essentially reprioritize the same projects or keep them the same. Now, we were also looking at other jurisdictions to see how often they go through similar activities, and a lot of them do these every 2 or 3 years. So COG, for example, they're actually switching to a biennial air quality conformity analysis, mostly because of the amount of work that it takes and compared to the benefit from it, doing it every year versus every other year. Mr. Chair said, you know, if projects do come up that between these cycles, for example, that are a priority Then they can certainly be added or ranked or added to the list or even added to the capital improvement plan recommendations that you send to council in the fall. So, because of these issues, basically because of the amount of work compared to the amount of benefit from it, we recommend moving to a biennial cycle.
I think this is also not something that the commission necessarily has to decide this evening, but we wanted to put it out there as something to discuss, and we can certainly revisit at the next meeting if that would be favorable. But part of what we had a retreat last spring with the commissioners, and part of what we heard was make our meetings more efficient, kind of bring us the action items you want us to approve. And so part of what we're trying to do to respond to that is to make sure we're bringing you things that you can act on in a given meeting. We also know that, I think Chris alluded to this, that if a project, like let's say we do this every 2 years, you will still see projects that we, let's say a new project is adopted through the North Potomac plan, for example, and when it's supposed to go to council in late June. Let's say a project comes about through that. You would still see that come through the capital improvement program if it was chosen for funding, and you could weigh in at that time and make sure that that's appropriate, or if we apply for a grant, that would be another way. So you'll still see it. It's just a matter of whether it's at that time or through the long-range plan. So I just want to make sure you all knew that. I think mostly we're just trying to make sure we're using your time well, respect your time, and frankly, we think that there'll always be new projects every year, but every 2 years is probably fine. We'll probably get you a nice sizable list that you can rank at that 2 year mark. So
yeah, the list doesn't change that much because
I think in 2 years it would change much more than in 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It would. Yeah.
Did you want to try and do this tonight?
So we can briefly discuss it and then give everybody some time to think about it in the next meeting. Because if we want to do this, we have to at least start by next meeting, something like that. But I don't think there would be much to do with the current list other than, look at it again. So.
My initial thoughts on this are that I think it's a good idea. I think bringing it to biennial is probably wise. I mean, it's just like you said, Mr. Chair, it takes a long time to get through it. Again, spending a lot of time talking about it because it's really important and everything on there, the things we're working with, they're very detailed and everything else. And since doing that every year, going over the course of like 3 meetings, that's a lot. But that's a quarter of the year. I'm working on this, and maybe bringing it down every 2 years would be a good idea. Kind of, it'd be a better use of our resources.
To me, the most important factor is that when it comes to making decisions, public policy decisions on particular projects, transportation projects are kind of at the upper end of themselves being long range and being capital intensive. All of these projects are at least 7-figure numbers. And to draw a very bad analogy, I think putting together this program is more like setting the course for an ocean liner than a sailboat. A sailboat gets buffeted about by the winds of change. These programs are subject to change, but nowhere near the kind of frequency that smaller things would. So it makes sense to me from that perspective.
Yeah, good analogy. Like you say, it doesn't change. And like you say, if a hot project comes up that should be considered near the top of list, we can discuss it and maybe just evaluate the top 5 with a new one in there. That doesn't happen because usually the larger projects like that you
I think
know.
It might be hard for us to do that because we wouldn't know if those top 5 are still the top 5 for the commission. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it would be making a judgment call without knowing what the commission viewed over all of the projects. So I think what we would likely do is if a big project emerged outside of the process, that we would brief you on that project and let you know if we're wanting to put that in the CIP or apply for a smart scale fund. But I can tell you over the next year, we're really focused on trying to fund the West End Transitway. Potomac Yard Metro Station, we have funding plan, but West End Transitway, we still have some unsure funding sources. So we're going to be coming to you with requests for that if we come. If there's any, and that project obviously is not a new project.
So. Usually you know about projects, it would be a kind of unusual circumstance,
yes,
if it pops,
yeah,
up, because especially if it's a big project, as those things are usually in the planning process.
And if they're smaller projects, we're typically coming to you to request grant funding. Like a lot of the ones that were on the list from last year's long-range plan, we took to you last fall to apply for grants. There were a couple safe routes to school, trail projects, safety projects.
Right.
Yeah, that we came to you. And we're hoping to hear about that. The next meeting, we hope to have some news for you on the, you know, the results of those. We usually find out.
We can move them off the list.
Exactly.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to understand if there were any cons or unintended consequences if we switched. It all sounds great to me. I just was kind of, since I hadn't gone through the process, would it change the process in the second year? Would it make it longer or more difficult? Or is there some things that could fall through the cracks if we don't do it every year? I just wanted to see if there was any apparent cons that I'm not understanding.
Personally, I don't see that because, like you say, all the projects are primarily on the list. It's just, you know, if the importance changes, mm-hmm, a little bit. But unless they're in the top five, you know, it's not going to change much.
It just stays
the top
on the
five
list.
Are the ones,
okay,
that probably would get funded, or if there was grants were applied for the top five, it might move them off the list because, you know, they're partially funded or completely funded, but I'm not sure any downside.
It's the right question to ask.
Yeah, that's good. But we can put this on the list for next month once everybody's had time. Melissa?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. There are a couple ways that it was described that what would happen in between. So let's say, for instance, Old Town North and the Potomac Yard North small area plans will be approved this summer-ish, and then we won't do this process until...
we'll start next spring.
Starting next year for the following. If there is something like a small area plan approved in between a biannual process, would it delay us being able to incorporate small area plan changes that might substantively change the improvements plan for an area that already, there might be some overlap, there might be some old projects on the LRP that reflected the previous plan for that area? I'm just trying to sort of sort out, because I don't think the thing that's going to happen is there's going to be a magical big project that we're going to immediately want to put on the CIP. In
right.
theory, the LRP is telling us what we want to put in the CIP, and it wouldn't make sense, and I don't think we have a justifiable process for fast-tracking something immediately to CIP status over the entire LRP and all the work that has gone into planning it. I mean, am I understanding that correctly, that basically the prioritized items that are already in there would, there wouldn't be a way for new stuff to shortcut? I'm not asking it to. I'm just trying to figure out like how what we would actually do with that stuff. We just like put it in a list and then wait until the update process.
I could speak because having managed the LRP in previous years, there were times when we had a smart plan that was completed many months prior to us starting the LRP process. So it's just at that time when we start the LRP and we start going through the project list and identifying what's been completed or is not relevant anymore, or projects that would be added from previous LRPs, or I'm sorry, smaller plans, then we would just go through that list and add them. So I don't think it's really a major concern or issue.
Right. It would just be a matter of keeping track and then bringing it to that process when we came up to it.
Yep. Yeah. In reality,
I was just going to comment.
but never mind, it's fine. That was the same. I've always thought of the LRP as kind of like, this is the wish list, and you can just keep adding to the wish list. But I was going to ask a substantive question. So I've been on 3 years now. It's been a long time. And I see a lot of the same projects coming up, and this may be kind of a diversion from the conversation we're having, but is there something more that we can do as a commission or as individuals to push these things along? Because, I mean, I've been through this process 3 times, and I know I've scored the same project 3 times, and they're, you know, they've consistently been number one, number two. You know, I feel like this is an exercise that we carry out because we're required to do it, but I don't know that it's kind of making its way into the budget. So I think there's a disconnect there that I think is troubling.
Well, it is making its way into the budget, and part of what might be actually helpful is in one of the meetings that we're dedicating to this, because before you arrived, we were just talking about how we had 5 meetings on that topic.
Just this one, yeah.
Yeah, last. We could actually come to you in one of the meetings in the fall and say, these were the CIP projects that were put into the proposed CIP that were in the long-range plan previously. We could highlight that for you. I think that's something that would be helpful, because there were a number of them this past CIP year.
Yeah.
I'm just one off the top of my head is the Homes Run Trail connection that was in the ped bike plan. We put it in the LRP.
Right.
We applied for a grant, and then it got into the CIP. Another would probably be the Van Dorn Multimodal Bridge, which was partially funded, but we asked for a much larger amount, so that came off that list. But I think there are a number of examples where we could highlight to you, okay, look, this came off the list. But I think, yes, I agree that one of the best things that the commission can do is to help us advocate for funding, to get funding for projects. And
right.
I mean, the upcoming thing that's coming up is a public hearing, and I was going to mention this to you, Jerry, where Jerry typically will represent the commission, and often we will have a council member or a mayor at this, where we advocate for our projects to the state. So there are a number of ways that we get you involved throughout the year to kind of help us. And I think over the next year, a big focus for us will be the West End Transit Way and how we can leverage funds for that, particularly given some of the federal uncertainty that's going on at the federal level. At the state level, we're really going to have to focus on that project.
Right. And just to let you know that usually it's the top five that get funded, and sometimes the priorities, if the top one is, say, for a new bus, which is, say, $675 or something like that, but the second project is a smaller one, and we've only got money to do the smaller one, you know, they'll just go ahead and fund that because they can't do the other one. It's a matter of funding that, and like Carrie says, you know, if you get a grant to do part of it, you know, then that would take it off the list if the city can fund the rest of it. So, okay, you can think about that, and we'll have some time to, since we're not working on the LRP.
Or if you feel that you want to act tonight, that's also fine.
Yeah, but, you know, we want to cover the North Potomac Yard.
Yeah, I mean, is there a sensibility that anyone objects to the proposal at this point in time?
My only question would be, if you're extending the timelines, if there's an opportunity or a new technology or some sort of, like, regional project that we would want to be a part of and take advantage of, would we have to wait in this process to then, you know, for example, like if VDOT or, you know, Arlington and Fairfax were advocating for traffic signal priority throughout the Route 1 corridor that prioritized bus transportation or something like that, you know, and we had an opportunity to ride on that procurement, you know, would we have to delay our process?
No, we wouldn't.
We would have to. Usually, if it's a regional project, there's funding for regional projects that would probably come under, because that's, they apply to the state for that. But
we would still come to you.
Yeah,
we applied. We wouldn't wait to, as you alluded to, we wouldn't wait to on a project. We would, if we saw that there was an opportunity for us to apply for funding for something. One example would be when VDOT came to us about the hot lanes on 395, and we really wanted a piece of the toll revenue for that project. That's not in the long range plan, but it's not something that we would not advocate for. So, and we came to you on that one. So I think we would continue to come.
Okay.
am I correct in thinking that the plan is a plan, a guidance document without regulatory force?
Correct. It's basically a it pulls from all the other master plans and puts all the projects in one document that are unfunded.
Like Mr. Lewis says, it's a wish list because we're waiting on funding. And it doesn't seem to move much, but like Carrie says, the best thing we can do is advocate for funding for these, both to the state and city council to get these done. And we did that last month by sending a letter to city council asking if they can readjust their funding to work on these projects.
And one thing we could do is we could do it for next year and then report back to you on how it's working. So if we
that would be good.
We don't necessarily have to decide tonight to do it forever that way. We could decide tonight that we could do it this way for a year and see how it works.
Statistically, we're comfortable skipping this year.
Does anybody have any
talk about
downside to not doing it? Okay, well, let's try it and start in April next year.
Okay.
Unless something changes between now and then.
All right. But,
okay.
Do we need to...
Do you need a motion?
I don't know. What do we need?
Do you need a motion for that?
It's pretty
simple. A motion never hurts.
Okay. Yeah. Make a motion to extend the time frame to a 2-year period for the LRP review.
No. Second. For clarification, are we making the motion to do that permanently or making the motion to do this cycle and return to the question after the process?
Mine was forever until changed.
It's true. We can always change it.
Yeah.
Can always undo it.
That was it.
Always another motion.
Another motion.
I'll second it. Yeah, we can always undo it later.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay. Motion carried. Okay, next we have the North Potomac Yard Small Area Plan update. And public hearing. Do we have any folks that...
I think we wanted to do a short presentation from the staff to you, and then we would have a public hearing. Yeah.
Right.
And just, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Sindyong, who's been the project manager for this. But I wanted to just introduce briefly. We tried very hard not to repeat ourselves because we know we were here 2 months ago, kind of gave you a briefing on this, but we wanted to kind of show you where we are in the process tonight, what stage we are. And Steve's going to kind of go over what the Transportation Commission's charge is for this particular item. So
and also Jeff Barner is in the audience. He's with Planning and Zoning, and he's the overall project manager of Smart Plan. I was managing the transportation element of it. So tonight we're going to be asking the Transportation Commission to endorse at least the transportation element of the Small Area Plan. As Carrie mentioned, I think it was back in February, when we gave a kind of a preliminary overview of the SMART plan and gave a lot of information on some of the recommendations that we were looking at. So basically what we'll be asking the commission, one of your charges actually that's laid out in our charter, is that the Transportation Commission is created to advocate and promote the development of a balanced transportation system for the city through the implementation of the transportation element of the master plan. So, for like all smaller plans, we then come back when we're getting ready to endorse them, is to ask that the Transportation Commission endorse it in terms of its consistency with the Transportation Master Plan. So in your docket memo, there is an attachment that has, we can go through that later on if you have any questions, but there is an attachment that has all the key goals that are in the Transportation Master Plan, and then how the smaller plan update reflects or is consistent with that, and it compares the 2017 update with the plan that was adopted in 2010, the previous adoption. So I'm kind of do a comparison between that baseline and what we're proposing tonight. So the transportation study, why we're doing this, well, we do a transportation study for all smart plans in general, but some of the key reasons why we felt this important, especially for this plan update. There have been a lot of changes over the last 7 years, including the Route 1 Metroway is now operational. South Potomac Yard is already pretty much built out. We also, last year, we adopted the Route 1 Oakville Triangle Corridor Plan, so there's development that will be going in that area fairly soon. And we had to build that into the modeling because that's now an adopted plan and has impacts in terms of the transportation network. And then with the updated plans for the key changes to this plan as compared to the 2010 plan, changes in the land use, the overall land use number is fairly consistent, but it's, there's a difference in terms of the types of land uses and where they're located, as well as the roadway network. The key change, I think we brought this last time to you, is the location of Potomac Avenue. In the previous plan, Potomac was kind of realigned so that it followed, kind of skirted the edge of the site adjacent to the park. But this plan update, we're keeping Potomac Avenue on its current alignment, and then we're building a new retail street east of that. So, I guess next slide.
Not advancing.
So I'm going to talk about, I'm going to lead off with some of the key recommendations of the plan related to the various multimodal aspects, and I think Carrie, you were going to kind of end it on some of the other traffic impacts and design for Potomac Avenue. In the Transportation Master Plan, the plan does highlight priorities in terms of our multimodal system for the city, with pedestrian connectivity being our highest or most important mode of transportation. So you can see here the plan update, just like the 2010 plan, has a pretty good grid system in North Potomac Yard. So as you can see, there's a lot of key north, south, and east, west streets. I mentioned previously that Potomac Avenue, one of the key differences with this plan update is Potomac Avenue stays on its current alignment, and we provide better connectivity to the I think one of the key things on the pedestrian connectivity, and that's also outlined in the attachment, is with the Metro Plaza and where the future Potomac Yard Metro Station is, by keeping Potomac Avenue on its current alignment, you don't have the connection for pedestrians from the station to getting them throughout the site, getting them to the retail areas, some of the office areas. They're not having to cross a major wide arterial like they were in the previous plan. So we think that with this plan update, it's a little bit better in terms of pedestrian connectivity, kind of introducing pedestrians off the metro into more of a kind of a retail-oriented environment with, you know, less impact in terms of having to cross a major street right away. The other thing is, in this plan, we will be requiring that the development is consistent with the complete street design guidelines that were completed last year. So, you know, just in terms of making sure that all streets are designed in a manner for all users. Going on to the next slide, in terms of multimodal connectivity, you can see here, this is the Route 1 Metroway alignment. Today it goes north on Route 1, turns on Glebe, and then goes up Potomac Avenue. With the plan update, we're at this point we're recommending to go up to Evans, turn right, and then there will be a station that interfaces with the Metro Rail station, as well as some of the local transit service, and then continues up Potomac Avenue into Arlington County. So that's what we're recommending at this point, though the plan does have some language that says at the point that we begin the phase two analysis of construction that there are some other options that we could consider, including keeping the Metroway on Route 1 throughout the area, but right now we're recommending that it go Potomac Avenue. This just shows you some of the other multimodal connections, including bike facilities. The solid lines, the solid green lines, are some of the existing bike facilities. So today, one of the key ones is the Potomac Avenue Trail that goes along the east side of Potomac Avenue, and then switches over to the west side that goes up to Four Mile Run. And then there are some other on-street bike facilities, including some bike facilities on Glebe Road, as well as Commonwealth. These dash lines show the future bike facilities. So Reed Avenue will eventually have a bike, it will be a shared facility. And then continuing east, key east-west bike facilities or connections from Route 1 over to the extended Potomac Avenue Trail, as well as keeping some key north-south routes. So we're recommending that Potomac Avenue, both during the interim phase one as well as the phase two. And I'm not sure, I know last time they probably talked about this, but just to remind you what the difference is between phase one and phase two. phase one is all the development east of Potomac Avenue where the theater site is today. So that's the first phase, and that would be developed by the year 2021. And then phase two, which is the full build out, would be the redevelopment of the basically where all the big box stuff is. So west of Potomac Avenue up to Route 1, and that would be completed by 2040. So that's what our traffic analysis was based on. But again, so on Potomac Avenue, both during phase one and phase two, having some type of bike facility along there. And then one of the other key things as part of the plan is extending the 4 mile run trail east so that it connects over to the Mount Vernon Trail. And then these blue dots just represent some of the intersection improvements. And a lot of these actually came from both the 2010 plan that was adopted as well as the Oakville Triangle Route 1 corridor plan that was adopted last year. Some of those key improvements include intersection improvements at Swan, Custis, East Cleaver Route 1. That was actually from the 2010 plan as well as the Route 1 Oakville Triangle plan. And then one of the other key ones that came out of both plans was East Reed, having that intersection approved to allow better east-west connectivity. If you're on Reed today, you can't make that through movement across Route 1. So with this plan, it would allow that through traffic to the through east-west traffic across on Reed. And then going on to the bike network, so this just shows within the actual site itself, some of those, again, east-west and north-south bike facilities. So in terms of east-west, we're looking at bike facilities being on Wesmond, which is on the far south there, the purple line. And then the next one to the north of there is Silver Meteor. And then the next one north of that is Tidelock. And the reason we selected those streets is because all those streets have a really good connection directly to the trail, the linear park, as well as the future extended Potomac Avenue trail. So we wanted to make sure that we had good visibility and good kind of direct bicycle connections to the park. And going on to the street network. So as I mentioned, the plan really does develop the area into a better grid system. And so you can see that here. It's just the connection of these future grid streets to the existing streets. So just in terms of the transportation analysis, I'll kind of briefly go through this. I think I'll hand it off to Carrie. But some of the parameters that we looked at on Route 1, some of the specific things that we wanted to make sure that as we were doing the traffic analysis is Route 1 is pretty wide today, and we wanted to make sure that we kept that street, that it continued to carry vehicular traffic as well as transit, but we also wanted to make sure that it didn't have any additional negative impacts to pedestrians because it is a fairly wide street today. So we wanted to, one of the parameters is that we weren't going to do any further widening on Route 1. In addition, we weren't going to be adding additional turn lanes on Route 1 because, again, that has impacts to pedestrians. Median brakes, there's limited median brakes today, and that's essentially because of the transitway. You have to have a good distance between blocks where there's east-west connections so that the transitway isn't interrupted every block for bicycles. And then in terms of some of the results, the future analysis includes signal timing updates on as well as some minor restriping at US Route 1 at Potomac Avenue. So that was one of the key things as we were doing the traffic analysis. We were seeing some impacts at that intersection where Potomac Avenue intersects with Route 1, especially in the kind of southbound, the westbound direction where that, if you're coming off Potomac Avenue and it connects to Route 1, there was some heavy traffic that we were seeing as part of the modeling. So we were so without actually widening that, one of the recommendations is mitigation is to change that from today it's two left turns and a right turn, so changing that so it's a triple left, and then that outside lane would be a shared left right. So you're keeping the same number of lanes, but then the receiving lanes on Route 1 are able to collect that.
Yeah.
But then really in terms of some of the impacts that we're seeing from the traffic analysis, comparing the 2017 plan to the 2010 plan, there weren't a lot of, they're pretty negligible in terms of the impacts to level service, travel time, delay throughout the throughout the plan. There were 19 intersections that we analyzed as part of this. So, there really weren't, and then we've got some charts that show you those results. And the other that third bullet is really north south travel through this area is pretty important. So, again. Trying to keep a lot of the traffic on Route 1, but also with knowing that Potomac Avenue, being a key north-south parallel route to Route 1, also helps to carry some of that traffic. But some of the things that we are doing to ensure, because Potomac Avenue goes right through the middle of this site, we want to make sure that it's, you know, continues as an urban grid, but also is safe for pedestrians, is that we want to make sure that the design of Potomac Avenue, both during phase one as well as in the ultimate build out, is designed in a manner that pedestrians can easily cross, that we're, you know, making sure that the buildings, you know, tie to each other on either side. Streetscape is going to be important, and then we know as the future bus rapid transit goes through there, design that in a manner again so that it's, you know, pedestrians and are kept in mind. Next slide.
So I think I might just step in briefly here, and because we're getting close to the end, but I did want to highlight a couple things that I think were really helpful through the planning process. And I know that the chair of the advisory group, Stephen Koenig's here, and want to recognize it. Thank you for coming. And we've had probably, I would say, I don't know, around 15 advisory group meetings at this stage. A lot of good participation. We had a number of charrettes at the beginning that were very helpful for the planning process. I think one thing that's a really big takeaway on the transportation side is, as Steve alluded to, we have Potomac Avenue, which carries significantly less traffic today than, let's say, Route 1. And there was a real opportunity through this planning process to relook at that road and think about how we could use it a bit differently. And I think we came up with some creative solutions. We did discuss that in the last meeting, but as Steve alluded, we're in the first phase of the development, this first piece that's going to happen in the next few years, we're going to add parking to Potomac Avenue during the off-peak hours, so basically non-commuting hours, so that we can narrow the roadway but also provide parking and kind of create that nice buffer between the traffic and pedestrians. So that was something that came out of the planning process. I think it was really positive and something that I think can help us relook at the way we design our roads and sort of interim conditions that we can have. When the road goes to the next phase, when we have that larger development coming in between Route 1 and Potomac Avenue, then we'll have the opportunity to relook at it again from a perspective of actually redesigning the entire roadway, because that is a condition that the developer is required to do, both to add the transitway, but also to sort of redesign that road. So then we'll be able to say, okay, what kind of transitway do we want? Do we want the side running? Do we want the existing condition we have on Route 1 today? You know, how do we want the bike facility to be treated? Those type of big questions. And so we put some language in this plan, and we do have some slides on that, which we included here if you'd like to see them. But we put some language that basically forces the planners at that time to do that. When those developments come in, we have to look at those things. We have to look at that roadway in a different way than it is going to be in the first phase, which is going to be that parking on either side. So that was a really good outcome. I think another piece that I wanted to highlight about this plan is it's got a very robust bike network, because we have a trail on Potomac Avenue today. We have a trail that will be built with the first phase of this development, which I'll show in a moment, that will be essentially along the rail corridor. So where it stops today on Potomac Avenue will continue up into Arlington, and we have to coordinate with Arlington on how that links up. But those are two really key, like, north-south bike routes. And then when we look at the road for the second phase for Potomac Avenue, we have the opportunity then to say, okay, do we want to convert that path to maybe an on-street network for bikes, because we will have a lot of development going where the trail is today. So I think we've kind of had some good discussion and sort of had some iterations of the plan that help us get to where we are. We have some tables, too, to summarize the traffic. So I don't want to spend, Steve had mentioned this traffic mitigation that we have proposed as part of the plan, but just summarizing the traffic data, really what we're seeing is the development's going to come anyway, whether or not traffic will increase year by year, we know that, but this gives us the opportunity to provide development around our transit, so around the metroway, around the metro station, and really helps us to get people not driving alone, which is obviously what we're trying to avoid. In the second phase development, you can see, obviously, you know, this is not new information that Route 1 is currently, you know, carries a lot of both transit and vehicle traffic, and will continue to do that and to the full build out in 2040. And Potomac Avenue as well has some increases, but this plan is not tipping those over the edge. This plan is and incremental, as Steve mentioned, when we did this effort in 2010, it's negligible in terms of what we're seeing in the new plan amendment. Some mix of uses have slightly changed, so some we're seeing maybe 200 trips difference in terms of that, but overall, not drastic. Certainly more of a negligible in terms of the impact. Recommendations, just want to highlight for you that have been updated for the update of the plan. Once again, we put some strict criteria in there for how that the street is treated both in the first and second phase on Potomac Avenue. We also established criteria for shared streets because we want to have a shared street condition along the park that separates the development from the park. We also sort of revised some of the language to provide more connectivity for transit, making sure that the right-of-way for the Metroway could be evaluated so that we can see, does it make sense to have a side running versus a center running and have that flexibility. And then for the bicycle section, obviously, we have Bike Share as a new program, so we wanted to highlight that. Next steps, tonight we're looking for the commission to, I actually have a slide that kind of your charge, but we're looking for the commission to endorse the plan as it is consistent with the transportation element of the transportation master plan. From here, we'll be going to the Planning Commission. We have one more advisory group meeting next week, but from there, we'll go to the Planning Commission and then the City Council. I think one thing I didn't want to minimize by any means is a really key part of this plan is the Potomac Yard Metro Station, as you know. So this plan helps us really support that metro station, which I know is such an important transportation element for the city. This plan helps us bring the development and the jobs and the trips to that area. So that's part of the reason it's so essential for the commission to weigh in on this. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Steve and I, and also have Jeff here from Planning and Zoning. So.
No questions? Come on, guys.
What I think is interesting with the process is it seems structured and designed for early success, that you know a lot of this development can open concurrent with the opening of the metro station. So you know I think that'll be an achievement that are mutually supportive.
I think you know you guys have an opportunity to bring the best knowledge that we know about these things to a project. And if we could just do this with all of the other metro stuff, that would be great. But we can't change what it already exists. But yeah, I think it's great. Good work, guys. Thank you.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I have no hesitation that the plan is generally consistent in helping us achieve the transportation master plan objectives overall. I think this matrix was really. It's really nice, a nice way of sort of responsibly creating a crosswalk to remind us all what policies are in the master plan and how we actually operationalize them at a small area plan level. I do want to remind the commission and staff that the devil is in the details. And one of the challenges that I continue to feel like we face is it's easy to say in a policy that we're going to prioritize pedestrians and bikes and then transit and then other things, but it's really hard to do it. And that's in part because of the network we have, what we're used to. You know, Potomac Avenue exists, people use it, they're used to it the way that it exists today, and so as we look at how to make changes to it, including good transitional ones like putting parking in off-peak hours on both sides and reducing the width so that people get used to two lanes instead of four. These are good approaches, but it's going to continue to be an uphill battle to make the connections that really offer a space that people think is first for people walking and biking and then only secondary or tertiarily for people driving cars. So there are some, I sent to staff before this, some like nitty-gritty design, you know, ideas that don't really rise to the level of the conversation that we're having tonight, but some of those get at that. Like Steve, you pointed out where the bike priority roads were selected for the plan as it stands today. And when you look at the plan and you look at what those roads are in the roadway classification system that's laid out in the plan transportation chapter. The same roads that are selected for bikes are also the Class C loading, like it's where the loading docks of the buildings are going to go. It's not the, like East Reed is where the retail frontages are. East Reed is where, I don't know if you can pull up the picture, but East Reed is where the Market Green is going to be, which is going to be fronted by all the great retail, and it's not the street that was selected to have an emphasis on bike facilities. And I know that we're not talking about putting like a separate bike lane necessarily, but it's the idea that when this is actually implemented, we might have trouble coordinating loading zones and loading docks and those kinds of curb cuts with an attractive bike facility. And they also, Tide, Lock, and Meteor don't connect to the neighborhoods to the west, and yet you did note on a slide just before this, one or two before, there is a bikeway connection right there that goes down East Reed
right.
to neighborhoods to the west. And so to me it's very intuitive to carry that through and say, well, let's find a way to make sure that bike connection continues all the way in, even though we don't have a perfect connection. It zags up to get to the Tomokera Park Trail. It's still much more intuitive to send people from Del Rey and from those neighborhoods west into the community through Market Green, have them stop at the cafes that are going to be out there, and just like, it's the welcoming space for people who aren't in their cars. And so it's just continuing to make that connection through and through with all the little pieces that we put together. So again, generally, I mean, I think the policies are going the right direction. I think the plan overall is going the right direction, and I don't see any problems with the overall correlation between the two. We just need to keep putting the details in to make it work.
Yeah, I agree, because if you got a bike route that requires you to go left or right on Route 1, it's not a good idea. So you might want to rethink that. But yeah, it's intuitive to those who ride bikes. But it's the same thing with walking. You want to have all the walkers to head to the retail area. And I think the way it's laid out with pedestrians first, then cyclists, then transit, and cars last, is a design that, you know, makes it a community.
Yeah, I think just to speak a little bit about the East Reed situation, we do have some constraints. I don't know if we have actually that street network might be a better slide to look at, because you can see some of the, so as you can see, East Reed actually doesn't, in this graphic you can see, East Reed doesn't go all the way through to the park, and the roads that we have chosen do that. So that was one of...
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah. East Reed is also, the design of it is going to, I don't know if Jeff, you wanted to speak to any of the design of it, but it is going to be comparable to sort of more of a main street design, which could lend itself to cycling, certainly. And that doesn't mean we don't expect cyclists on that street. And we can certainly look at bike facilities, but I think we were concerned about having more conflicts with essentially having higher traffic volumes with the cyclists on that street. So we were trying to pick routes that would be a little bit less with the cyclists having to contend with those volumes.
I was also going to add, so we actually spent a lot of time as we were working with the developers looking at the loading zones on some of these C streets, and that's something that we're going to continue to look at and make sure that the design of those loading zones is done in a way so that has minimal impacts to bicyclists, because we did spend a lot of time and we redesigned a lot of these things at a conceptual level. But that's something we'll continue to look at.
I would also, Steve, add if I may, I think Melissa, you hit the nail on the head, which is, I think as this moves forward to design, the devil's always in the details. And I think the next step that we'll have to go back to the Planning Commission will be design guidelines, which will include street cross sections. And I think we could go to the bike diagram.
Yeah.
I think our conversation has been on the streets to prioritize pedestrians and bikes first, and cars happen to be on the roads and design the roads that way. And if you think of all the other streets, those sort of C streets, those are maybe streets that are going to be a little more challenged because of loading. So maybe that's where a facility needs to be provided. But on the other streets, design them to accommodate them up front. and on the facility on the streets where maybe it's a little bit more challenging because you have loading docks and other things, separate facilities may be required. So I think we share that goal. Trust me, I think we've had lots of conversations about that, and I think hold us to that standard when we bring in the design guidelines. So when you see something this fall, Stephen and Melissa are here, so you're going to hold us to that. So that's our objective, and so, you know, that's when we bring you, and Dave is here as well in the Planning Commission. So when we bring those pieces to the Planning Commission, the devil will be in the details.
I'd say whatever we can do to make sure speeding doesn't happen on Potomac Avenue, I think, is going to be critical, because, like, currently crossing that road as a pedestrian, that's what always you know, freaks me out, is like seeing cars zoom by and stuff.
And actually, there will be pretty much at every block within North Potomac Yard, there will be a signal. And, you know, part of that wasn't just a traffic circulation issue, but it was also to have regular intervals for pedestrians to be able to cross easily across the street without, you know, if it were unsignalized, it'd be a lot more unsafe and dangerous for pedestrians to cross there. So.
Yeah, right now, Potomac Yard does encourage, you know, because there's no lights, there are few lights, there is a lot of speeding there. Cause,
it's also open when it's developed. People slow down.
And it'll take care of that, because it's one of the places that police write tickets.
Well, you already see them speed down Main Line.
That's right.
Well, that's why they put in the stop signs. It's hard to get up to...
Well, I think we just added stop signs to Main Line, right?
Yeah.
I think that came with the TNP last month.
Yeah. And a lot of that is like related also to sight distance on Main Line.
Right.
We typically don't install stop signs to address speeding, but there was
the shortcuts for community.
Yeah, but people do. Yeah, I mean, they have trouble turning in those intersections, so that was part of the reason that we did that.
Yeah, well, I see in, you know, the update of the in the 2017 plan, there's emphasis timing again that, you know, pedestrians, cyclists, transit. I mean, and like you say, the devil's in the details, and that's, we're all looking at that to achieve that goal to make it my community. Okay.
So, would the chairman look for a motion?
Any other discussion?
Is that a public hearing?
Yeah. Okay. Is there any? Okay, I'll open the public hearing. Does anybody have any? Anybody want to speak? Nobody wants to speak? Silence. Okay. Everybody else agrees. Must be good plan. All right. Public hearing is closed. Any other discussion before you have the motion?
Well, this might, you know, be something to wait for the design guidelines, or I don't even know if it would be specified at that, but I was just reading a really fascinating article that in L.A., for a new development that's looking at, like, 2 years in the future to opening, they're designing the parking garages for anticipating adaptive reuse, where it can be converted to office in the longer term, that they won't need as much parking, given rideshare and, you know, autonomous vehicles, or, you know, whatever else is in the pipeline. So they're making the floors like flat, and they're keeping the elevators in the middle, and they're saying, you know, this could be an office or residence
someday when the demand for parking goes down,
right? And they're also focusing on the arrival and departure experience curbside significantly more. So, you know, that like pick up and drop off of
there'll be more
shared
of that
use vehicles, yeah,
than the parking,
because that's pretty much guaranteed at this point, I think. So
yeah.
I also want to acknowledge Commissioner Jones was on the advisory group for this project as well. So,
any other discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Transportation Commission endorses the North Potomac Yard Small Area Plan Amendment as it is consistent with the transportation element of the city's master plan as proposed by staff.
All right. Second?
Second.
Any other further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
I guess we can pass this on.
Okay.
Or does she have?
Stay for you.
Okay.
Return it back to the owner.
Okay. Other business.
We got a change in venue. They're going to do construction to this room, so it looks like June through September will be in Sister Cities, 1101 downstairs. I guess everybody knows where that is.
Mm-hmm.
And many meetings in there. So, won't have to walk up the stairs. So they're, the size of the room's going to stay the same. They're just
renovating it. Yeah.
Renovating?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, the only thing I want to remind, this year we didn't have actually a public hearing for the city budget, and so I want to make sure that we put that on the agenda for each March, assuming that the city budget schedule stays on their schedule, so we can do that. Okay, any other business? No other business? Motion to adjournment?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Nobody's going to be opposed. I thank everybody for their time. Appreciate it. We're all volunteers. That must be a record.
I think so. This is the time I've been here.
I think that's a record.
Yeah. So usually we'd be here at 10 o'clock doing the long-range plan. Right?
See what happens when you shift it to a two-year period?
Yeah, everybody's going to
That is. This is the shortest meeting that I've seen.
Good deal.
Can I have that here? Thank you.
I'm going to make it.